Okay, so yesterday we started the sugya of lashon naki, lashon migunen, nivulpeh, and all the related issues. The conceptual question we'd left off on was how are these related to each other, right? So, of course, I get one and it doesn't work. So we have improper speech, general category, right? So we had issues that are based on, breach of intimacy, something like that, right? So this is clearly, nipple pad, right? But then the question of what are the others? So we saw that according to the Meiri, this is also the problem with Lashon Meguneh, which for him equals the opposite of Lashon Malia, or informal, the negation of Lashon Malia. Okay? Yes? Okay, informal logic, just negation of Lashon Malia. Right? What about Lashon Naki? Right, then this would be, I don't know, right? Something else, right? And this would be Lashon Naki, right? And this is, Usur. This is, let's call it Usur minus, I don't know, right? On the continuum. This is Nivul Peh minus, right? So it's somewhere on this continuum, right? So this is Usur. And according to the Erie, this is, we'll call this, Nivul Peh minus. Right, this is what the Gemara called Lashon Meguneh, right? And we had the two languages, speak Lashon Aliyah, don't speak Lashon Meguneh. Simple shot, according to the Erie, is that this is just the negation of that. These are the same thing. Lashon Naki is something else, right? Yes?
Yeah.
Right, that's where we left off. Yes? Yeah. What? Lashon Naki? Then this was Lashon Ma'alia and Lashon Meguneh, right? This is the negation of that. And Nivul Peh is what's Usur, right? This was the Sugya in Shabbat and Ketubos, for which, 70 years. Hell becomes deeper for you and blah, 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 blah. Okay, good. What?
No.
Okay, so that was where we left off, and we noted that this could also be maybe Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, right? Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, we noted, used the language of Lashon Naki in a sexual context as well. Right, Lashon Naki, to explain why we say Shuvu Lochem Lo Aleichem, by going back to their tents, right? Meaning they're allowed to be intimate with their wives again. So it could be that according to that, all three of them would be here, right? So if we just move this over, right? So maybe even Lashon Naki, according to Pirkei the Rebbe Eliezer, and then you have to ask what he thinks, if he thinks that then this equals Lashon Naki, right? Or possibly if this is, Nivul Peh minus,
like double minus.
Okay.
But I thought it was Molly Grace too.
Oh, sorry, that's implies, right?
This is implies.
What is right? I'm just doing it now.
Principle?
Yes. But this implies this. Yes. So that's what that is, right? That's why I put that. It's not, but if you would like, I'll make it a regular arrow, but I want it to be that it implies this rather than it's
actually.
I like
smiley face.
Meaning it's like two steps removed, but it's still part of this continuum. Okay? Now, who does not believe who? So within this, we have basically people saying that all of these categories are fundamentally the same on a continuum, right? Okay, which of these does not seem What the simplest pshat in the sugya is that which is not in this continuum? What? Not lashem aliyah, which is equivalent to lashem gunah. Well, right. What? Naki? For now, let's stick with Lashon Naki, Lashon Ma'alia, Lashon Miguna, and Nifl Peh. Let's stick with this for now. Okay? Now. What? Well, for now, no, but we'll see. Okay? Now, this is all in the assumption this is the same. But the simple shot is that there's something else going on here. Right? Right? So what is that something else? So let's turn to Lashon Naki. Now, the simple pshat in the sugya, right, if you remember on Gimel Amud Bet, was that Lashon Naki is a lower level than this. How do I know? Because what do you have to balance it against? Lashon Katsar. Right? Speaking. Briefly. Right? And that you only insist on Lashon Naki if it's also Katsar, if you can also keep it succinct. Right? But if there's a balance, right, if you have to balance it, then Lashon Katsar wins out, which implies that Lashon Naki has some other value. Right? Now, the extremes of this you find in, let's say, who? Right? Who very much thinks that this, whatever this value of Lashon Naki is, it's very, very different from Nivul Peh, Lashon Miguneh, sexual problematic language. Who puts Lashon Naki in a completely different category? So, here you have a few. So, for example, Rambam and Perush Mishnayot, right? Why? So, what does the Rambam and the Perush Mishnayot say about Lashon? Right, what does he say? So, number six, Nikra Laila Kederach Nikra, or Kederach Nikra in Kama Dvarim Behafachan, right? He says this is a euphemism, right? You call things by their opposite. Why? Va'asa Kain Lidaber Bilashon Na'eum Ule. He did this so you could speak beautifully, but then he had something. Vilo te ptichat hasifer b'shem ha'ederim and ha'adarim klomar ha'choshech. So that a book opens, doesn't open, meaning psachim, with the privation of privations. Okay. What is that? Privation of privations. Is he okay? Yeah, you. Okay, just making sure. Right? What is privation of privations, Erica? Why am I using that?
Like, what's the opposite of the Holy of Holies?
Why am I using that word?
It sounds cool.
No. Because the Rambam holds of what's known as privation theory of evil. What's privation theory of evil? That there is no evil. There is only good and the lack of good. Right? There is no evil. Right? It's called privation theory. Right? That there is no thing is good. There is, right? There's no such thing as radical evil. There's good and the lack of good. There is no radical evil. This was a very popular theory, which became much less popular in the 20th century, right? When after the Holocaust, people came to, philosophers started arguing that no, privation theory can't explain the Holocaust, and therefore it is, you have to invent a category called radical evil, and then there was a famous philosopher who argued that this was not the case. She was very controversial. Hannah Arendt, right? What book did Hannah Arendt write in which she argued against the notion of radical evil?
Who?
Hannah Arendt. Wait, one second. I'm going on a philosophical aside. Let me teach you something. General knowledge. She wrote a book called Eichmann in Jerusalem, right? Where she argued based on the transcripts from the court case that you see that Eichmann wasn't motivated by radical evil. What was terrifying about Eichmann was that he basically really liked orders and organization. And so, like, he just, you know, did what he was supposed to do, right? And therefore, she said that even what looks like radical evil, terrifyingly enough, might be the banality of evil, right? Right? That it's completely, like, right? That even radical evil is not itself, right, a positive thing. It can come from the banality of evil. Anyways, close parentheses. One second. What does the Rambam say, though? The Rambam says, Lashon Naki, is it really important to speak Lashon Naki?
Yeah.
No. What does the Rambam say? Right? Only in specific.
What does Naki literally mean?
Clean.
Clean.
Right. So what does he say? Only in specific context. He said, listen, in general, according to the Rambam, is there anything wrong with saying Laila, Choshech?
No.
No, but when you start something new, you want to start with a smile on your face, right? Okay, so you don't want to start with privation of privations, darkness, because the Rambam believes that darkness isn't a thing. It's the lack of light.
Oh, like darkness is just the absence of light.
Yes, it's the absence, exactly. And he's like, you don't want to start a mesechta talking about absence and privation, right? So we use the word or, because or is positive. But what does it sound like from the Rambam? Lashon Naki, whatever it is. What?
It's not sexual.
Not sexual, and also it's not really usser, right? At all, right? Meaning this is usser or sort of usser, and this is nice. It's nice to use Lashon Naki. And the Rambam limits it and says, it's only nice to use it in the beginning. Beginnings, you should talk about life, right? It's like the first day of yeshiva, we're all happy, right? And then I start getting upset by what people don't know, like 3-4 days into yeshiva, right? What? Start giving you Hebrew, I start, you know. But the first day, we're all smiles and whatever, right? Yeah. What? Correct. And he'll say Laola means like, you know, keep it in mind. Always have it in mind that, you know, Lashonaki is a nice thing to do. Yeah, something like that. I don't know. From this line, I don't know. Now, there could be, right, something in between, right? Right? That there's like the breach of intimacy, which is usher, and things that are tonight, and things that are like usher or problematic for other reasons. So this might be how you would read. So look, for example, at the Gemara number 3. The Gemara there says, "My kadamta lea barachamim, dechtiv ene lea rakot." The pasuk says that Leah's eyes were soft. My rakot. What does it mean, soft? Even rakot mamash. If you say they were literally soft, efshar begnut behema temeima lo bidi berakatuv, dechtiv mina beima teorah mina beima sher nina teorah. We don't even insult animals because we don't call them tamei. We call them not tahor. Bignut Sadikim Dibera Katuv. Now, the simple reason is Gemara, is it like the Miri? That Nivul Peh, that, is it? Right, what does it say? We don't speak badly about animals by calling them Tamei, so we won't speak badly about Le'ah and call her eyes soft. Exactly, right? So it could be that there's two something else's here, right? That this is more like, right, insulting, right? And this could be either also usher or, let's say, problematic, right? But this is still on the negative side, and then Lashon Naki would be something else, right? And this is the simple implication of the Gemara in Bava Kamma about Le'ah, right? So then the Gemara says, okay, whatever, right? Then the Gemara goes on and explains what Rakot actually meant. Now I just gave you that in number 5, the second Gemara in Bava Kamma points out, sorry, this is Bava Batra. The Gemara in Bava Kamma that I gave you, right, also values this language by talking about why we are less mean to Ammon than Moav, because both of them were impregnated by their father. You remember that story? Yes, Lot, you know, Lot, right? But one of them called her son Moav, which is from my father, which is very explicit, right? And the other said Ammon, which is Ben Ami, right? Ben Ami, which is the child of my nation, which is euphemistic, right? And because Moav, the daughter who called her son Moav, was more in your face about it, so we're meaner to Moav. Now, whatever that is seems to be on this side of the equation, right? That's clearly talking about sexual propriety and the like, okay? So now we have, right, all the way to this extreme, breach of intimacy, which is an usher, which might, right, theoretically could move all three, nivul peh, lashon megunan, lashon naki here. Simple because lashon naki is out of that. We saw that for the Rambam, lashon naki seems to be right? Not even usher, it's a nice thing to do, and maybe only in certain contexts. Right? And then, in the middle, there might be other things that are usher for other reasons, right? Okay, now, who else says things that push you in this direction? That Lashon Naki, at least, is not really usher, right? It's just a nice thing to do, and therefore might only be limited to contexts.
Right, so Rahman says, this right starts.
Okay? I would put beginnings, but I'm close to the end of the board, right? What? Very good. The Ravid says it also. Why does the Ravid say it ain't done? So the Ravid says...
He quotes a bunch of examples of things where... Like,
right, so he says... Right, first of all, he says... Ki lo shanatana lashon hara l'p'tichat divarav. Right, first of all, he agrees with the Rambam that it's only about starts, right? And then he says something even more important, right? That what? Three lines down. Aval hatam habarur, shekol hamukamot shetzarich lagdin letchilat halayla, kikdon bikach havet matzin masaot, tani or, bnei sheadayin yisha shem or hayom eina choshech. Yisha mor v'eina choshech. What does he say? The Ravid says two things. Why do we say or? One is, it's the start of the Masechta. What's the second reason? Did you catch it? It's a very important halachic point. The Ravid has a unique shita that when do you have to do B'dikat Chametz? The beginning of the night when there's residual light. And therefore, what is the Ravid saying? Lashon Naki, did we only start off the Masechta with Orei? Who asked? Why are we so confused here? Right? The Ravid has a better answer than Lashon Naki. What's his answer? Yeah, or doesn't mean night. What does or mean? Or equals, right, night with residual light. And therefore,
right, what? What does it mean by residual light?
Leftover. Leftover light from the day. Sammy, no, guys, shh, no.
Sunset? What time?
Yeah, he means like right after sunset. When there's still some light, it's technically, halachically, night, but there's still light. So what is the Ravid saying by doing this? He's saying, first of all, right, is Naki, is it usher to speak in not Lashon Naki?
No,
not Bichlal. He says, why are we doing it here? First of all, because it's the start. And second of all, it actually has halachic, there's a halachic reason that we say or, but what's the implication for our sugya? How important is it to speak by Lashon Naki? Not really. It's a combination of the fact that in this case, or is the more accurate term. Right, Kobe? Right, in this case, or is the more accurate term because, what did the Ravid say before you run? That we say or because B'dikat Chametz is specifically the beginning of the night when there's still residual light. Plus the fact that we get into the Masech, but that's the only reason we care about Lashon Naki. Right? So the Ravid is even more extreme than the Rambam. Right? It's not just that Lashon Naki is just like, okay, we speak in friendly words and smiley faces and whatever. Right? Right? We put some smiley emojis just to make you feel better when we start them, our first messages for the year. Also, there's an actual halachic reason to use or. Right? But if you put it back in our sugya, that means, how important is Lashon Naki? Right? It's like if you have a bunch of reasons to speak in a way that's sort of more positive, great. Yeah.
According to him, then, why wouldn't they give a more specific, like, they could use multiple words, let's say, too.
So according to him, it'll be, or can mean night, and it means light, and therefore you know it's that time of night when it's light. That's about the most specific time they can come up with. Fine. But this is the way the Ravid, right, understands it, right? After the Gemara went through so much pain to prove that the word or can mean night. But again, right, this very much puts Lashon Naki in a completely different place, right?
Yes.
Question.
Yeah, I understand. Okay, this marker, can you? Okay, great.
Question. Right? No proof. Gemara. Yeah, I got it, okay?
Fine. Is it problematic in the Gemara? Yeah, 100% it's problematic in the Gemara, but what do you want for my life, okay?
Fine.
Anyways. But again, the upshot of it is that the simple upshot of the Rambam, the Perush, Mishnah, and the Raya, right, is that Lashon Naki is something very different, and therefore it's only usher and very, it's not even usher, it's only valuable in very, very specific contexts. Okay, guys. I know this is also the dining room, but you've got to limit this. It's really distracting. Okay. Fine. So let us, now what about, look at the Balamor for a second. Look at number 10. What does the Balamor say? So you should know that the Balamor and the Ramban in the Melchama are considered amongst the hardest Rishonim to read. So if you could, you had trouble reading the Balamor. Who is the Balamor, by the way? Yeah, we should do both of those. Who's the Ravid and who's the Balamor? One second. Who's the Ravid? Who's the Balamor? I did. So the Ravid is Rav Avram ben David. David. He was the leading authority in Provence. He's from what city is he from?
Provence.
No. France. Provence is southern France. It's a region. What city is he from? Poitiers.
Was he alive?
Let's see. Is he? So you probably know the Ravid from his comments on the Rambam. So therefore, when do you think he lived in conjunction with the Rambam?
After.
Wrong. Before. He is because he didn't really come before. He started at the end of his life. The Rambam was born. Okay, not before. He dies before the Rambam does. Right. The Rambam is 1140 to 1205. The Ravid is 1110 to 1198, right? So he's older than the Rambam, right? They overlap for much of their life, but he sees it at the end of his life. This is not hit, right? His main works are works on Shas. We just lost many of them. Yes, it is. The Balamor is slightly later in Provence. His name is Rabbi Zerachia Halevi. And by later, I mean basically contemporaneous. He's 1115 to 1186, right? 5 years later, right? But you will find that with the Balamor, so one of the things you should know about Provence, if you're in doubt about Provence, there's usually a hint, is that almost all of the names of their books, and sometimes their actual names, are connected with light. Light. So his name, what's Zerachia mean? The shining of God, right? The shining of God. Now, why the Meiri is from Provence? What does the book mean?
Light,
the one who enlightens, right? The Sefer HaMe'orot, the Book of Lights, is from Provence. The Reb David HaKochavi, right? Reb David the Star, who wrote the Sefer HaBatim, is from Provence, right? Why is there so much light terminology going on in Provence? Because there are two major cities there. Where the Jews live, and they are not Poitiers, that's not actually the central one, but they are Narbonne and Lunel. And what do those cities mean? Very good. Lunel means the moon, and Narbonne is related to the sun, right? And therefore, the Rebbe Zerachia Halevi, what did he name his book?
Sefer
HaMa'or. And on Nashim Nezikin, it's called the Ma'or HaGadol, in English known as the great luminary, which is the sun, and on Moed, it's called the Ma'or HaKatan, also known as the moon. Right, so yes, they're very into these names. Yes.
It's ironic because they were in the Dark Ages.
Yes, they definitely woke up and said, this is the Dark Ages.
And then they
Yes, they woke up every day and they were like, yes, we are in an unenlightened age. That is how they felt about it. So the Balamor says as follows: Sugya d'shmaita kol hecha d'chi aydadin yinu mishtai b'lashon kavod. If it's equivalent, then you'd speak b'lashon kavod or lashon naki, right? The hecha d'nefishe me'adadin. But if it's longer, then shavik lahu d'nafish v'nake derech katzar. He says the simple pshat of the sugya is that look, right? Lashon kavod is only If what? There is no benefit, right? I'm not using it, right? 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 That's the simple Prada Sugya, right? That Lashon Naki, Lashon Kavod, you use it if there's no, if there's nothing to be lost. But if you're going to lose brevity, right? Now, what about this, right? If I said, well, what do you mean? If, right? You know, would I be able to be Matir Nifl Peh? Because, you know, it was the shortest way of saying something, right? Right? I want to end this conversation. Right, the best way to end the conversation is to ask an extremely uncomfortable personal question about his sex life. Let's see how fast he leaves. Aha, it's mutter, right? No one would say that. That's crazy, right? It's usher, right? Mordechai's like, what? It could be the day after. How was last night? You know, like, right? Right, it could be whatever. Right, we would not permit it so easily. That's not how things work. Right, so let me just finish the Balmar. He says, "Uvavachle lashon miguneh." So, what does he say? He said, "Listen,
that's only true of what
lashon naki, but not of lashon miguneh. Lashon miguneh is on this side of the equation. It's usher, right? Lashon naki is on this side of the equation. Malefish etzarich hakaduv lomar lasir Yisrael afrisham mikol tuma kidichtev izartem in Israel. Just like the Torah warns us against tuma, kedarshin and gabei shratzim dichtev ani Hashem maale umakadosh baruch hu il male yotzei Yisrael mitzrayim el b'shvil derazet ayam avo parshat amabul shalba katuv lasir mina tuma elala wrote min shiva umin shnayim ikema katuv amar asher inena tehora, right? So now he says something very important. And he says, remember we saw that according to Meiri, right? Lashon Miguneh is a subset of Nivul Peh. Does the Balamor believe this? No. The Balamor thinks, where does Lashon Miguneh go? Here. It's about being insulting, right? Now, what about this language? Does he say that it's... Now, why does he say that this is insulting? So he says very simply, if you need to call something tameh because it has a halachic implication, then what? That's mutter, right? That's totally fine. Why does our sugya say that in the case of Noach, it was important, the Torah went out of its way and said, asher inena tehora and not tameh, because it's a non-halachic context, and therefore... It's just descriptive, right? Right. It's not a legal term. In a legal context, tameh means impure or forbidden, and tahor means pure or permitted, depending on the context. There, it's not miguneh. But if it's simply about dividing them, right? There's no halachic implication. Then it's insulting to the animals, and then that is what lashon miguneh, which is usher, not for a sexual reason, but because, right? And this is. In line with what? Where is he getting this evidence, right? What's the simple pshat? Where does he get this from? Gemara in Bava Batra, right? The Gemara in Bava Batra used this case of the animals at the teva to prove that what? You shouldn't be insulting Leia and saying that her eyes are weak, right? Right, so he seems to say, listen, there's Lashon Naki, which again is very, very low on it. It's only if there's no benefit not to use it, right? You should only bother yourself to speak Lashon Naki if there's no reason not to, right? But then does he distinguish between Nivul Peh and Lashon Miguneh? Yeah, right? Nivul Peh is breach of intimacy, and that's also here. But there's a separate category of things which are insulting, which we call Lashon Miguneh, right? But all of that is distinct from being nice, which is Lashon Naki. So he probably still thinks Lashon Malia is just the inverse of Lashon Naki. This is Lashon Kavod and Lashon Naki, right? So Lashon Miguneh and Lashon Malia are this, right? Which is for him in this category, or in the middle category, the insulting category. Right? at least that's what, at least one of the things in this category, right? I don't know if there are other things, but that's the one we have. Right? Okay. Yes, Avi.
Why does it matter exactly what I mean? Why don't we just say speak nicely?
Oh, why does it matter? Good. Hold that thought for a minute. Okay? So the Marsha, just look at the Marsha for a second. The Marsha says, he quotes this whole thing. Let me just get the number 7. I'm debating whether I want to get into it. Yes. The only thing I would add is that, yeah, so if you just look at the last line, he has a whole complicated thing in the drasha, but I want to focus on the last line. Okay? I'm not going to get to how he got it, but does the Marsha agree with this analysis? And put Lashon Meguna on this side in the Usher category? No, what does he say? That even Lashon Meguna, you only have to care about saying Lashon Meguna when? When there's no reason not to. So how does he break this up? Right, he puts... Yeah, probably. But how does he do it? Right? So we said, right, the Balamor, right, so the Meiri puts Nivul Peh and maybe even Lashon Naki on the Usher because of breach of intimacy category. The Balamor puts insulting language on the Usher side and calls that Megunet. Right, Lashon Naki, we say, is only lechatchila, right? It's only like a benefit, but there's nothing problematic by the language, and therefore maybe it's only the start of the Masechta, or the Raivet at the start of the Masechta, when there's also halachic reason to say it that way, right? Or maybe when there's only no benefit of using the alternative language, right? But what the Marsha adds is that he thinks that Lashon Meguneh doesn't belong here. There's like quasi not really insulting language. Doesn't belong on the Usher side. Where does it belong? Here. And therefore he thinks that even Lashon Meguneh you should only avoid if there's no benefits using nicer language. Right? So what's the nafka mina, Avi? Avi's like, well, why don't you just say speak nicely? But the Gemara is, but there is a nafka mina, right? Because according to, let's say, the Marsha, anything short of a direct, right, directly explicit sexual talk, or really hurting someone, right? You only have to avoid that if it doesn't make your life harder, right? If there isn't a if there isn't a better way of saying it, right? That's not true. No, not there's not always a better way to say it because there's a value to being brief, right? And if using so many, right, if remember, this is in the context of what?
I'm talking, so I'm not exactly telling you the letters of what I'm speaking.
Yeah, but that's exactly what the Gemara says you should be doing.
That's not feasible in a conversation that way.
Okay. Well, hold the thought on Lashon Katsar, right? But, right, there's enough coming to here as to whether you think Lashon Meguneh is more in the positive camp or in the negative camp, right? If you think it's in the negative camp, then it's Usher or close to Usher, right? But if you think that Lashon Meguneh is really just, you know, trying not to say something that sort of, if you think about it too much, is insulting, then it's also only Usher if what? If there's no better, briefer way of saying it, right? But brevity is enough to switch it. So now Avi says, well, wait a second. I don't understand. Am I supposed to count every single letter and every word? So I will very briefly, I don't want to get into this too much, but On Gimel Amud Bet, right? So the Gemara had said what? Remember, the Gemara's conclusion here was Lo'olam yishane adam letalmido derech tzara. You should always teach your student in a brief way, right?
Yeah.
Good. What does that line mean? Give me two possibilities. It says always teach your student in a short way. What is that line teaching you? When? So one possibility is it means exactly what it says. is that the value of brevity is only in an educational context, where the less I talk and the more I can come up with good sound bites, the more likely you'll remember what I say, right? So if I can boil everything down to some pithy whatever, right? Or I can come up with, you know, five hakiras that explain everything, right? Hefza gavra, maisa totsa, quality, quantity, whatever, right? And make it that you remember it, then great, right? But outside of educational context, Avi, who cares, right? So that is the position of the Taj Bates, just so you know, right? Okay? The Taj Bates writes that. Who seems not to agree with that assessment and thinks that the value of brevity is always? I didn't give you this source, but so the Rambam happens to seem to think that way, because I'll just read you that the Rambam in Hilchot Deyot Perek Bet Halacha Daled, he quotes this line in the following context: Lo'olam yarbe adam b'shtika. You should always be quiet as much as possible. V'lo yidaber, do not speak. Ela obidavar chokma, except about wisdom. Obidvarim shetzarich lahem l'chayei gufo, or things that are necessary. Absolutely necessary for your body. Amru al Rav Talmido, Talmid Rabbeinu Hakadosh, lo sach sicha b'deila kol yamav. They said about Rav that he never spoke idle talk in his whole life. V'zohi sichat rov kol adam. And Avi says, wait, that's every conversation. He says, you're right. That's what everyone talks about. That's old garbage. Never do that. V'filu b'tzorchei aguf. And he says, and even when you're talking about what your body needs, right? Like you're talking about, I need water, food. I need to go fill up the gas in the car, right? Basics, right? Completely normal things to talk about. What does he say? Lo yarbe adam bidvarim. Don't say too much. Va'al zeh sivo chachamim. It's about this, about being too verbose when you're talking about basic needs. Kol amar bedvarim mevichet. The more you talk, the more sin you bring. Va'amru, and the Mishnah says in Berakhah, lo matzati leguf tov el hashtika. The best thing to the body is silence. And even in Torah, your words should be small, packed with meaning. Right? But if it's a lot of words with no content, Harezu sichlut. That is stupidity, right? No, brevity. He wants brevity. Brevity is the soul of wit.
Is this a painting to do with
yes, his world lies somewhere between brevity is the soul of wit and silence is golden. Yes, the Rambam. Yes. Yes. This is from that particular formulation is from a nice little scene in The Phantom Toll Booth, if you ever read it as a kid.
Oh, my God, I love that book.
It's a great book. So if you remember The Witch, right? The Witch, right? Not The Witch, but The Witch, right? The Witch, right? She said she was getting stingy with her words, right? And that was her final move, right? Was from brevity is the soul of wit to silence is golden, right? And that's when all people stopped talking, and then she was imprisoned until the return of rhyme and reason. It's a fun book. My kids loved it.
No. Yeah.
Yes, I read it to my kids.
I understand that fantasy was used as an alphabetizer like a descriptive term. I don't think it makes
sense. Fancy?
They use fancy in that book a lot. Like, I fancy this.
Oh, yeah, British.
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought you were talking about her. Her name is not fancy. It's faintly.
No.
Faintly macabre. Yeah. Faintly macabre.
There's a really good
fun book, not important.
By the way, there's another book called Time that's like similar to Phantom Toll Booth.
Okay. Yes. Okay, good.
Guys, we got it so far, right? So we have Nimo Bavi, Usher Side Bridge, and we have the Meiri and Pigri Lozer that move two or three of these categories over to this side. At the other extreme, with Lashon Yakin, we have that it's only when you don't lose anything, maybe it's only the beginning of a step, but when it has a lot of meaning, whatever. And then we have other problematic categories, possibly like consulting categories, which might be Megunet, We saw that the Balamor, for example, moves Migunah into this other category because of insulting, as opposed to Marsha, who said Lashon Migunah is really just the same as Lashon Naki, the Nafka Mina being. Do you have to avoid this, like, mildly, possibly insulting language that's not really insulting at the cost of brevity? According to the Marsha, no. According to the Balamor, yes. Right? That only by Lashon Naki do we care about being concise, but not by Lashon Migunah. If it's even Eichshu insulting, right? You should switch over here.
This is just a simple shot in the Gemara. No one has yet challenged this. That Ma'aliyah, the Lashon Ma'aliyah is the negation of Lashon Megunah.
So, if that's the case, then...
Not Lashon Naki or Kavod.
You said that it's all based on sexual
propriety. So that we saw in the Mi'iri for Lashon Megunah, the Pirkei Re'lozer seems to even use that in the context of Lashon Naki.
How would the Mishnah
say, so that's why this is hard, to say Lashon Naki. Presumably Lashon Naki is more either here or maybe in the insulting category. Yes, I know. It's hard. This is hard, right? In economy, part of the problem with the Miri is what does this have to do with the example that we started with? I agree with you. Okay. Now, Avi is getting annoyed at me. Because Avi is like, what does all this just say? Just say, speak nicely. But this is actually important, right? Because what makes, it's very nice to say speak nicely, but what does it mean to speak not nicely? Right? No, there is not. There is absolutely not a consensus at all. That is exactly the problem. What does it mean to speak nicely? Please, pray tell.
Would you want your child to say it?
What?
Would you want your child to say it? If so, it's nice.
My pitom. You think everyone agrees what their child would say?
Should say yes.
No.
There is a thing like the word crude.
What's crude?
There are some things that everyone agrees should.
Maybe. Yeah, and there are plenty of things where... So what you're telling me is that we don't need any standards. It's
beyond a reasonable doubt.
So, and what about things that are not beyond a reasonable doubt? So there's no standard?
What I'm saying is beyond a reasonable doubt, it isn't every single person agrees. Most people agree, and this makes sense because of this.
So you've said beyond a reasonable doubt, most people, right?
Yes.
What you, me personally, those are three formulations that have nothing to do with each other. Those are very different standards, right? There are plenty of things that I would not be happy with my kids talking about that a reasonable person might not, and there are things that I'd be happy with my kids saying that other people might not be, right?
Regardless, there's a sense that isn't going to fix that.
I'm sorry, if you live a halachic lifestyle, don't you think halacha should guide it?
This isn't going to solve exactly
why not?
What can and can't say.
Isn't that exactly the point? You're setting up principles.
What other principles are there besides for speak shorter and don't...
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out here, isn't it? Right? Meaning... If I come over to you and I insult you, that's called onat dvarim. It's a different isra d'oraita, right?
Right?
Right, I can put this over here, right? Onat dvarim. Onat dvarim is an isra d'oraita to hurt people, to verbal abuse, right? So fine, I can't come over to you and say, you're ugly, okay? I can't do that. That's not nice. You're fat. You're whatever. I can't do that, right? But... I called something which is tame rather than that which is not tahor. Oh, very good. And now Binyamin realizes that much of modern conversation and debates about speech ethics is exactly about this question, right? Because while most people can agree you shouldn't go over to someone and say that you are fat, we can disagree about whether it is wrong to... whether it's better or worse if you're describing me to say, oh, he's the short teacher over there or the vertically challenged teacher over there or whatever stupid formulation we could come up with, right? People actually spend their entire life with this, right? This is what people do, right? And whether it's necessary or this is crazy, right? At some level, it's like he's actually talking about this, right? Because... I guess it's in this short, it's calling them a short, it's in this weird insulting category, right? Right? So maybe you should be obligated to say vertically challenged, which I don't know why that's better, right? No. I really don't care.
Well, maybe fat is hard.
Yes. Yes.
What about short key?
What?
It was a short key.
Sure. I mean, I yeah, for the record, I don't care at all. It's like, ooh, you've noticed I was short. I am hurt. Whoa, no one realized that without you saying it. Oy vey. It's like, yes. 5'1", I mean, you could weigh. Is that short? Is that tall? I mean, I don't know. But now you've said it. I'm insulted. Yeah. But people actually do care about this. They do care about it, right? To know how sensitive do I have to be, right? And yes, and if any of you have ever had, you know, been in the yeshivish community, you will know that sometimes, right, they are overly sensitive to this. So, for example, right, who went to a yeshivish school?
Yeshivish or Hasidic?
Yeshivish. Okay, good. What? Okay, Rambam has yeshivish teachers. Depending on which teacher you had, this might have come up. But in certain shiurim, if you're learning Masechet Beitza, right, which I learned in 11th grade in Rambam, there are certain Rebbeim in the yeshivish community who won't call it Masechet Beitza. Why? Because Beitza also means testicle. Very good. So they call it Masechet Be'a. Now, that's of course absurd because Be'a just means egg in Aramaic, so it has the exact same problem. But fine, right? But what are they doing? Right? They are like erring all the way over. Right? Ah, very good. And you'll say, well, what are you doing, right? This is, right, this makes it worse. But you understand that people, and you'll tell me, well, a reasonable person won't do that. Right? Maybe they will, maybe they won't. In the yeshivish community, that's totally standard, right? And they'll be like, oh, you called him a Masechet Beitza. Ah! Correct. And that is my point, is that obvious saying, well, it's obvious. No, it's not obvious. You need to figure out what are the principles here. Right? So now, let's talk about the principles, because so far we've done description. But to go to Avi's point, what you really need to ask is, okay, you've described it, but why does this matter? What is the guiding principle that would lead you to believe any of this? Okay? Right? So, let's start with the Rambam. Okay? What does the Rambam think is the guiding principle of these types of speech ethics? I'm going to leave Lashon Hara out. Right? Lashon Hara out. I'm going to leave direct or not dvarim out, right, where I actually attack someone, because that might be an interpersonal problem, right? But simply speech ethics. What does the Rambam think drives these values? What does the Rambam think drives these values? No, hello. 12, in the Mor Nebuchim, the English source that I gave you, so all of you can stop complaining. Guys, what does the Rambam say in the Mor Nebuchim? I gave you an English source and you're still complaining. Ah, next time I won't give you English. I'll give it to you in Hebrew. Yes, I'll give it to you in Judeo-Arabic and I'll make you find a Judeo-Arabic expert to explain it to you. Fine? You can ask, I guess you can ask Arya when he gets back from wherever he is. Though I don't know if any of them know Judeo-Arabic, which is what he wrote it. Which is like the Yiddish of Arabic. You have to ask Ray Karopkin, right? That was my go-to.
What does that mean, the Yiddish of Arabic?
What?
What does that mean, the Yiddish of Arabic?
Yiddish is Judaic German. Uh-huh. So Judeo-Arabic was that to Arabic, more or less.
That sounds like a
Latino. Anyways, yes. So what does the Rambam say in number 12? The Rambam says what? The Rambam, it all comes down to one word, and that is? Kedusha. Right? The Rambam says, there's one important thing you need to know about, and that is Kedusha. What is the opposite of Kedusha? No. What? The Rambam says there's a value of Kedusha. What is the opposite of Kedusha that you're supposed to avoid? Physicality. The physical body. And therefore, the Rambam says, right, what makes Hebrew a holy tongue? It lacks what? A word for what? 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 It lacks all sexually explicit words and?
Physical.
And explicit words for bodily processes, for defecation and the like. right?
Because those are...
Right, so according to the Rambam, Lashon HaKodesh, the reason Hebrew is holy is because it has no explicit word for sexual, for sex, or the sexual organs, right? What? So, one second before the Rambam is right, but he'll say, so how do you say in Tanakh, right, what words are there to explain the sexual act, to describe the sexual act? What? So there's yada, which means to know. There's the shkov, which means to lie, right? To lie with. There's Baal. What does Baal mean?
Master of?
To master or act like the spouse of. Right? All of these are...
Anyone knows.
Right? Yeah. Right? Even what is sperm?
Zera.
Seed. Right? It's seed. Right? It's the same word, zera, it also means like, you know, a fruit seed, if you're planting a tree. Right? What?
What?
Yeah, but I mean, there's no explicit language for this, right? The Rambam says that is, so according to the Rambam, if I ask you, what is the value to this? Right? Now, in general, by the way, Sefer Kedusha of the Rambam, right? The Rambam, in the Yad HaChazaka, divides the Yad into 14 books. What is in Sefer HaKedusha? What halachot are in Sefer HaKedusha? The Book of Holiness. What? Specifically, right, Isurei Bi'ah, right, is forbidden sexual unions, and what? Nope. And Machalat Asurot, and forbidden foods. That's it. Right? It's things you can't eat and forbidden sexual unions, right? Because it's, right? Kedusha for the Rambam is the avoidance of unrestrained physicality, right? That's it. That's what it is. So the Rambam, the guiding principle for this is that speaking about sexual issues explicitly is problematic, or physical things in general is problematic, right? And therefore, why do we have this whole thing? Why is Nimelpeh so bad? And why is Nimelpeh minus so bad? Right? Because they're all pushing you towards
Kedusha.
Kedusha. Right? Towards Kedusha. And there's a range of how bad something can be, but that's what it is. Now, so I will note that briefly, right, we could quibble, right, about whether Kedusha for the Rambam is really about avoiding physicality or avoiding sexuality. As Ray Aronson said yesterday, that really, I was talking to him briefly, and he said, it depends on what? Depends on which psychological theory you take, right, Mr. Zericker, right? Right? What, right, there are psychological theories that assume, right, the more Freudian you get, then, right, the more you think that even, right, discussions of defecation and relieving oneself and the like are really veiled, veiled sexual references, right? In which case, you could just say, yeah, he told me he had a long conversation this with Roy Chait, other Roy Chait, like Israel Chait, on this point. Is a better way of understanding this really collapsing everything into sexuality, right, based on those psychological theories.
I
don't go in that direction. It doesn't seem to be simple shot, but one could, yeah. What? Ray Ginsberg and Ray Aronson were talmidim of his. They're brothers. Yes. And Rishmuel David is Rav Chaim Ozer's son, if you didn't get that. There's many Rav Chaim Ozer's chains. And if you go 5 minutes down the road and you go to Ma'arava, the high school, right, there will be Rav Baruch Chait, who's another cousin. Right.
I knew that there was the one that said Mark.
It's his son.
Yes. I didn't know there was a third one.
Yeah, Rabbi told him his son.
What,
no.
Rabbi Israel Chait lives in New York. He's just brothers of Rav Chaim Ozer, and he happened to have taught Ray Ginsberg and Ray Aronson. Is it crazy for someone to have siblings?
Yes.
Oh, I'm glad.
Rabbi have siblings?
What?
No.
Yes. Okay. Anyway. Yes. Now, what?
Yes,
one.
Older or younger?
Younger. Okay.
So this is one possibility, right? Is that what drives this whole discussion is the value of Kedusha, which for the Rambam is understood as avoiding talk of explicit sexuality, okay? Now, did anyone, really, by the way, you have now all lost your rights to complain to me about lack of English, because I gave you English, you're still complaining, so you now have lost, you have lost, no, you've complained the English too hard. No. Yes, but you can complain to somebody else, because I will ignore you. Who wants to be the, who wants to take I will grant my role of authority. Okay, good, so you can complain. What, should we give you smicha for it? In return, would you like smicha? Okay, so what title would you like?
Fair,
the chief complaint officer. And that's good, that's a title for, mayor is the title for chief complaint officer? Yes. Yes, Rabbi Meir Soloveitchik said he once got into a very confusing situation that hung on that particular confusion. He was at the he spoke at the Republican National Convention, I think it was, right, a bunch of years ago, and so he was talking to someone and he introduced himself as Meir Soloveitchik, and the person gave him a quizzical look, and afterwards she brought up her husband, and he's like, this is the mayor of what city was it that you're the mayor of? And then he said it was the first time in his life that he got more of a response for his first name than his last name. Right. Good dress. But yes, because of that. So fine. But you can have that. Mayor. Spelled differently. No, that's fine. Listening is fine. As long as I don't have to listen to it, it's fine. Okay, good. Good. So mayor's listening. I appreciate it. And I like the name Mayor. You know my oldest is Mayor also. We're fans of this name. What? That does not mean carrot in Hebrew. That would be gezer, but okay. Anyways. So. Okay, now, guys, okay. Now, the Rambam in number 13, guys, the Rambam in number 13, guys, the Rambam in number 13, in the Perush Mishnayot, makes another very important point about this topic, okay? He's commenting on the Mishnah that we already saw before, which is, Lo matzati lagufto velashtika, right, or... Right, that the best thing is to be quiet. And in that context, the Rambam introduces his theory of speech ethics. And in that context, he makes the following very important point. Vani omer ki hadibur yitchalek lefi chiyuv torateinu lechamisha chalakim. Speech is divided into five categories. Mitzvah, ve'asur, umma'us, ve'ahuv, umutar. What are those? Mitzvah is obligatory, right? A commandment. Asur, forbidden. Ma'us, disgusting. Ahuv, beloved. Mutar, permitted. Which means that the Rambam makes a point that, and again, going back to the obvious point, why do I care to say be nice? No, it's important to categorize. No, that there is a way. There are things in life which are forbidden. There are things which are obligatory. And there are things which are neutral. But in addition to those very three important categories, what else are there? Things which are ahuv. What is ahuv?
Beloved.
They're beloved, meaning are you obligated? No. Is it spiritually edifying to engage that speech?
Yes.
And you'll tell me, what difference does it make if it's a chiyuv or a ahuv? The answer is, because if you don't wake up for davening, I can be like, where were you for davening? You have to be there, right? It is a chiyuv. You have to daven, you have to say shema, you have to shir shmoneh esrei, right? If you don't do it, you failed in your obligation. If there's something which is like nice to do, so if you do it, I'll say, you know, you really should do it. But if you don't do it, I'll be like, okay, I mean, you missed an opportunity. But I can't
I can't throw the book at you because you weren't obligated. Same with Asur and Maus. There are things which are forbidden. So if you do it, you've crossed a line. That's Asur. And then there are things which are Maus, which is like Pashkish in Yiddish, right? It's just wrong. Is it Asur? Can I penalize you for it? No. Is it the right thing to do? No. So probably in general, but the Rambam introduces this theory in the context of speech ethics. Okay, so let's just quickly skim it. So you can read it inside, but what do you think he puts in mitzvah? What's in obligatory speech?
Torah,
davening, whatever. Good. What about asur? Sheker v'chazav rechilot malshinut uklala. Perjury, lying, lashon hara, cursing, etc. And then he says, umimenu nivlot nivlut peh v'lashon hara. Nivlut peh. So where's the Rambam in the category put this? Asur, right? Nivlut peh is asur, right? Okay, then he continues. He says, what about Dabar HaMa'us? Hu Adibor Asher Ein Lo To'elet La'adam B'Nafsho. This is pointless talk. V'lo Mashmat V'lo Meri. It's not about obedience or rebellion. Kirov Sipurei HaAmon. B'ma She'ira U'ma She'ayav. Like talking about most things you talk about, what happened to you, what I did today, what I did yesterday, politics, all that. V'eich Menag Menag Ploni Barmono, or how that king is in his palace. Umaitasibat Mot Ploni, or why such and such died, or Usher Ploni, or how this guy got rich. Right? The Rambam doesn't think this is neutral. He thinks it's like, why are you talking about this? Narish guy. Ve'ili yikru etal chamem sicha b'teila. Va'anshei hama'alai shedlu b'navjan. La'aniyach zeh dibor. V'ne'emar al rav talmid. Right? And then he quotes. Then what is in Ahuv? So that's about talking about how good ethical qualities are and the like. And then mutar is things that are completely neutral, but you should still minimize talking about them as well. Okay? And then in the end, like errands. So minimize how much you talk about it. It's nothing problematic, but still limit it. No. Okay? And then at the end, if you're interested, the Rambam goes on a rant against all the people in his era who were part of the courtier culture, who were writing wine poems, right, and things like that, and he gets very, very angry. I gave it to you if you want to see how angry he gets. Now, if you had to guess, though, where would the Rambam put Lashon Miguneh? Is it in Asur or Ma'us? Out. Give me 2 more minutes.
Ma'us.
So, I'm not sure, but my guess is that now we have a bit of a language for what the Miri might mean for Nivul Peh Minus. Right? Is Ma'us. Right? Because what does the Rambam say? There's Asur, and then there are things which are like not, they're not technically Asur, but they're on that continuum. Right? So the Rambam, I think, helps us give us a category saying, listen, what does it mean for something to be Nivul Peh Minus? It's Ma'us.
Yeah, but Nivul Peh is like so much more strict, like,
correct. So, but it could be that those lower levels are in the category of Ma'us. Now, what about Lashon Naki? For the Rambam, what is that? This is probably Ahu/Mutar, right? Where there are things that I can't obligate you, but it's beloved to talk that way. And what did the Rambam say about Lashon Mutar, about neutral language? Yeah, that even there you should limit as you can, right? So these values around Lashon Naki probably is in the Ahu Mutar camp, right? So far what we have now is the Rambam's theory, where what drives these categories is an overarching value of Kiddusha, which the Rambam is avoiding speech about sexuality and the physical body in general, added with the fact that we now have a language for what it might mean for something to be Nivul Peh Minus and the like, is the fact that the Rambam has categories of Ma'us, Ahuv, right, things that are good or bad, but not technically Usher. Okay, tomorrow we can probably in half a shir finish the rest of the Makara here, so I'll give you the next source sheet, however much time you spend on this. Fine, but the next thing I want to deal with is if you go to the next line in the sugya, the Gemara is going to bring a brief story there of the Kohanim, that they only got a bean size of the carbon, right? And what I want you to deal with is the major question the Achronim ask is, and the few of the Rishonim, which is, it's less than Kenizayit, is that valuable? And if it is, what does that tell you about the nature of the mitzvah of eating carbonot? And remember, if you have any complaints tomorrow, Mayor has offered to be the complaint chief complaint officer, not to solve the problem, just to listen so I don't have to. Okay? But if you all read the Rambam inside, then you can complain to me again.